And I pointed out yesterday, often that which you say yes to is some form of limitation, because it's form. And that in other cases, that which you say yes to may be some form of death, some form of loss. And that is particularly powerful. Any kind of loss or death leaves an emptiness behind when a form is no longer there. And you don't run away from that empty space. And it's an opening into the formless. One could say every form obscures God. And the death of the form enables God, which is the formless one life, to shine through. Therefore, death has long been recognized as sacred in ancient cultures who had not denied death, whereas the modern culture, modern Western civilization, denies death. It's not, they don't know it's sacred, they don't even want to talk about it. They don't want to see a dead body. You can't, it's not allowed. It's illegal to see a dead body. They would send you to a psychiatrist if you asked to see a dead body. There must be something wrong with you. So death is hidden because the Western culture is totally identified with form, with mind. So the worst possible thing for it is death. Oh my. And even in hospitals, they don't know anything about death, where death happens continuously. Old people's homes. Every old people's home, if there is such, would potentially be a spiritual center. The greatest ashrams would be old people's homes, because that is the potential of old age. But it's not recognized yet. So they would be the most sacred places. So this ancient cultures have recognized the sacredness of death, not knowing perhaps why. Intuitively, they knew it to be sacred. But now you can see why it is sacred. Because the formless shines through where there was the form. And that can happen when there's physical death, but it can also happen when you die psychologically to the me. And that is the spiritual transformation. And that can happen through intense suffering or through the power of a spiritual teaching, or in many cases, a combination of both. And I suspect that in many of you, it's a combination of both. You've had the suffering, otherwise you wouldn't have come. And now there's the power of spiritual teaching, which tells you, you don't need to suffer anymore, and you don't need any more time before you can enter the surrendered state. Why would you need time to enter the surrendered state? Do you need more knowledge before you can enter the surrendered state? Yes, but before I enter the surrendered state, I need to understand the universe completely. You've had many pointers already. Everybody here has read scriptures, beautiful pointers. No, I have not yet fully understood the nature of the universe. I need a few more years, says the mind. And the amazing thing is a deep understanding happens not in the way that the mind imagines it. A deep understanding of the universe happens as you enter the surrendered state. There is a deep knowing there that is beyond concepts or labels, a knowing that the mind knows nothing of, a knowing that can even inform the mind, and the mind then can give spiritual teaching, because it is linked into that, the unmanifested, the unconditioned, the seed of all intelligence, pre-form, before it becomes a thought, it's there. And then there are other things. I need to sort out my life situation before I can surrender, because my life situation does not look balanced. There are so many loose ends, I need to sort it out. I have so many problems to deal with, I cannot surrender yet. And you don't realize that the act of surrender deals with all problems beautifully. Because in surrender, you enter the state that is free of problems. And yes, you still have a life situation, but you don't inhabit a conceptual identity based on your life situation. Yes, you have 3 court cases against you. Yes, your wife has filed for divorce. Yes, you're on your way to meeting your lawyer to file for bankruptcy. At this moment, you are at the bus stop, waiting for the bus, knowing that you have court cases, your wife, divorce proceedings, and you're going towards your lawyer for bankruptcy proceedings. Potentially, you could be very unhappy. You could be, because your story isn't going the way it was supposed to go. It has deteriorated, and potentially you would carry the burden of an extremely unhappy conceptual sense of self based on your life circumstances, your life situation, and you derive all your identity and your sense of self from that. Your me would be very unhappy and very heavy and dense. And you would be talking to yourself as you stand at the bus stop and saying, this is what it had to come to. Now, 30 years of work, all for nothing. The whole marriage has been an illusion. She's left me. She's probably been unfaithful for years. It's all turned out to be for nothing. I've lost it all. All that work that I've put into it, I even have to give up my credit cards. Who am I? Nobody will want to talk to me. You are confirming to yourself that your life situation is very bad. Your sense of identity is derived from the story, the deteriorating story that you are telling yourself. And perhaps you start telling others this, the very dreadful story of you and what happened, and they will confirm to you that yes, you have a right to be very unhappy. Surely destiny has dealt you a dreadful blow and you should be unhappy. Or you could be standing at the bus stop and allow your attention to move into this moment. And with that, a certain alertness arises. In that alertness, you feel yourself breathing, you become aware of the totality of this moment, as the sky above you, the air you are breathing, the ground you are standing on, the moving energy forms that go past you called cars, and there's a tree, and there's the field of alert attention, in which all those things arise. And there comes the bus. The doors open, and you get in, and you sit, and then the bus moves. And in that state of alertness, you look out of the window, and the wonder of phenomenal existence goes past you, all these forms of life. And you are there as an alert field of presence. And you still remember where you're going, but you're fully there. Your identity is not derived anymore from a story you're telling yourself that is a conceptual identity. You're not denying that there are situations that you need to deal with because you're dealing with it already. You're sitting on a bus going somewhere to deal with it. You're dealing with it already. And this is a beautiful moment. You're sitting there perceiving, and more than perceiving, being the still field through which the universe is being perceived. And when you are that alert, you can sense the entire body as alive. We may have come to that also. And then you get off the bus, and then you walk into a door which says attorney at law, and you sit down, and then you say, okay, this is the situation, he says. Your bank balance is zero. Your debts are $5 million. I recommend that you file for bankruptcy. Okay. And then you hand over your American Express Platinum cards. You've lost your cards, and perhaps your sense of self was somehow in each card a little bit. Because whenever you paid in expensive restaurants with the American Express Platinum card, they respected you. So, and that is satisfying. You were getting that confirmation that you are somebody. But in a strange, but as you hand over the American Express and other cards, that leaves a little bit of an emptiness. And as you accept that emptiness, it feels incredibly peaceful not to have these cards anymore. They're gone. Not that you formulate some kind of new belief that says it is more pure not to have credit cards. I am now more pure, because that's you creating another thought structure to reincarnate into and derive a new sense of self from somebody who is now so spiritual that he has no credit cards anymore. That's worse than having credit cards. No, that's not how it is. You simply allow the loss to be there. And that is suddenly the peace that you were already in deepens. And then you might have to give up your big home. And again, there it is. And the next moment you have to sign something and it's gone. And then you might live in a trailer for a while. And as you sit there, this moment is still sacred and beautiful. It doesn't really matter so much anymore, the forms around you, because you don't need the forms to reinforce or enhance your sense of self. Where is your sense of self? It is the field of a live presence of this. You know that yourself to be that still alive field of attention. The forms, you don't need them for an identity anymore. So the trailer, of course, it's not as comfortable as the big mansion. The space around you is smaller, confined. It makes a noise when it rains at night on the roof. And yet, all it means is there's a different scenery around you. You're still sitting somewhere, a little less soft than before. Bit less. Not that much space, but what you just have to step out and you have a lot of space. So I'm seeing when your sense of self is not story-based anymore, you can accept the ups and downs, the gain and loss that come with every life story as the changing forms around you, the comings and goings, the play of opposites, gain, loss, fine. And there's peace in that. And the strange thing is, great, you are now aligned with the totality. Before, you had tied yourself into a little knot of a me. Life cannot flow very well through a knot. It can flow a little bit, but not a free flow. And that knot was the me. Then the knot gets untied. Not that there's anything that's destroyed, simply the illusion of that little me against the universe goes when the knot is untied. And you're still there, but you're not a knot anymore. And the strange thing is, because you're aligned with the one, the totality, it can move through you, act through you, and also tends to attract certain things towards you because of that much greater sense of being one with. You're not separating yourself off from by resisting what is. By opening yourself up to what is, you are connected with all that is. And that can then move in, and very often you find moves in as helpful factors in your life. Sometimes called grace suddenly comes in. It happens. Many things then happen by grace, not through self-effort. Not that you cannot put out energy anymore. You may put out energy doing something, but not effort energy, just energy. Effort means you need to get somewhere. Energy is just the flow of energy. The difference is two people running to catch a train, it's moving already. One is in great stress because he needs to get there, catch that train. The other one is running and enjoying the movement of energy as he's running to catch the train. He's more likely to catch it than the other one and not to fall off. So that suddenly helpful factors come in that you didn't even know about that were there. Suddenly they're there. But the strange thing is the state of completion is already here. No matter what form your surroundings take, the completion of you is already here. The self does not need more anymore. So any more that comes into your life is simply the play of forms. They come and you say, nice. If more comes again, and maybe a year later you have another mansion. Maybe. But you won't be the same. You will move in that mansion not feeling that this is mine. not seeing that as my achievement, simply seeing, yes, another beautiful structure around me. Of course it won't last. A beautiful structure around me. So this, the world of form doesn't give you that satisfaction anymore that it gives you, which of course is short-lived, when you need it for yourself, your sense of self. The satisfaction that a big mansion would give you when your self is in that, it belongs to me, and then you invite others and they come into the mansion, it's an extension of you. You feel, okay, you're coming to visit me. This is me. Look at me. That doesn't happen anymore. There's simply an innocent enjoyment of the forms, but no link of the self with the forms, because you can see the whole idea of owning something is a fiction. It's you. How can you say that I own this house? What does that mean? It's a fiction in the mind that others agree with. That means you own it. If others don't agree with it, it's a delusion only in your mind, which could say, I own this ashram. Okay, you can live with it. If that delusion gives you a sense of an enhanced sense of self, you can live with that and say, I'm not telling anybody, but you know the truth, I own this place. Nobody knows. Now then, people would call you deluded, but there are people like that. But then if others agree with your delusion, and they will actually sign papers to tell you that you're right, you own it, they all agree with me, now I own it. But it's the same delusion, except that others agree with my delusion. It means nothing. This is how, of course, as humans move into a time will come, of course, when ownership will become totally meaningless. They try to do it with communism without going through change of transformation of consciousness first. And of course, that didn't work. So the whole idea of me in that structure becomes absurd. You can enjoy the physical structures knowing it's just that it's not going to last. It's fine. And so you move into the mansion and then perhaps one day you walk out, you don't even want to be in it anymore. It's possible. It makes no difference. So it's the changing scenery around you, no more. The different the circumstances of your life that change, the passing of time, means simply the scenery around you is changing. And it's fine. You actually enjoy that. And you realize, yes, the famous sutra of Malibu, all structures are unstable. That was, reading that was so, oh yes. Did they know what they were saying? I don't know. My suggestion is that we introduce some silence into our retreat. Of course, there is already an underlying silence here. But in addition, that we spend some time on the external, it looks like spending time, keeping silence. And those of you who want to keep silence throughout, of course, are free to do so. I may recommend certain periods of time when we all keep noble silence. Those of you who beyond that want to be in silence are free to do so. We may set aside a section in the dining hall for those who don't want to speak. It was suggested that along the wall, by the walls. You don't have to face the walls as they do it. That's a Zen practice. And so, and if it is your choice, then if somebody approaches you, you can just go. But don't make sure that you don't discriminate to whom you do this. If you do it, you do it to all. Now, when there's a period of silence, then of course you're alone with your mind. And that's fine. Recognize thought as thought, the thoughts that come. Recognize thought as mental noise. Recognize every thought as a particular perspective on things, a limited perspective, a limited position. Every thought can only give you a fragment of what's there. Any thought concerning another human being that you may have is fragmentary. And the opposite statement about that same human being is probably also true, except it hasn't manifested in time yet. There's no absolute truth in any judgment that thought makes. Every thought is some form of judgment, some form of interpretation. And so you don't totally believe in everything that comes up because it's the conditioned mind. You recognize that. So, in other words, as thoughts come to you, especially during the silent period, your spiritual practice is not to stop them, but simply not to take them that seriously. That's all. To have a relationship to thought that doesn't take thought all that seriously. Thought, of course, wants to be taken seriously. Every thought says, give me your complete attention, I matter. I am the truth. Believe me. Every thought wants to draw your attention in because through that it grows and it can proliferate into more thoughts, related thoughts. That is to be trapped in the stream of thinking. That is to be trapped in form. Every form wants to persist in that, in its form. Every thought wants that also. But of course what is happening here on a non-beyond the personal level is that consciousness is moving out of its identification with form. Consciousness has played the dream of form for a long time. It's become this universe, a beautiful dance of form. And now consciousness says, okay, it's waking up out of that beautiful dream. And what is happening in you, whereas before consciousness was thought, it was in every thought, now consciousness is moving out of the thought forms. This is only a relative way of looking at it. You can't really explain it. So it's freeing itself from the disguise of form. And that is the unconditioned consciousness that arises. And that happens with the simple thing of not taking your thoughts that seriously. Okay, there's an... And so then thoughts pass through more quickly. If you don't take them that seriously, they come and go. They're not fueled by identification with them. And then you will find yourself sometimes being in the state of simple, alert presence, in which you can perceive without labeling. You just allow this moment to be so completely that the need to interpret it mentally isn't there anymore. And yet there's a deep knowing here, but to the mind it looks like unknowing. A beautiful work written in the Middle Ages in Europe is called The Cloud of Unknowing. It's a mystical treatise by an anonymous author written in the Middle Ages in England, how to know God. And he says you know God not through knowing, through entering the state of unknowing. Non-interpretation. Because every interpretation that you have is conditioned. So to say yes so completely that you do not need to interpret whatever form this moment takes, that may include a human being that comes into the space of now. And the enormous freedom that comes with not interpreting other human beings through mental judgment, which is thought, allowing that human being to be as he or she is, giving him or her, one could say, space. That's true love, is allowing each human being to be without imposing labels and interpretations. Whatever label or interpretation you impose on another human being through the mind tells you nothing about who that human being truly is. It only tells you something, perhaps at best, about their particular conditioning, form of conditioning, behavior that they display, which is due to their conditioning, at best. At worst, it's no more than a projection of your own mental conditioning. And in many cases, it's a mixture of the two, which accounts for a mixture of what you see is the conditioning in the other person through the eyes of your own conditioning. And usually, that is what creates human interactions and the conflict in human interactions. So to be with a human and that just allow them to be. And when you speak again, they speak to you. During those periods when we speak, and you may be speaking in the dining hall, you may be speaking in the gardens, while another human being speaks to you, be in the state of alert attention, which is the state of listening totally, to giving total attention as you listen to the words. Complete attention. Not preparing the next statement or interpreting what the other person is saying. Just give complete attention. And you listen. Maybe you won't say anything. Maybe some words will come. Who knows? That is bringing the unconditioned consciousness into human interactions. So in the meantime, while you're alone with your mind, don't take the mental noise too seriously. It isn't all that serious. Don't carry around with you the burden of your life situation and start thinking about what you left behind, all the unsolved stuff that you left behind, things you have to face when you get back home. Where is it now? If it has any reality, it must be here now. Yes, you'll face it when you get back home in the now. But you can't face it now. You can only make a dream world of thoughts around it and an unhappy identity. So don't carry the burden of a conceptualized self in the head and walk around this beautiful place with that burden of a me and what's going to happen to me. Nothing is happening to me. This moment is all that there is. So to start with, I recommend that we keep noble silence between now.
Spider wants
liberation. That we keep noble silence between now and our next meeting, and then we'll see after that, see how we feel. So we keep noble silence between now and our gathering this afternoon, and then let's see what happens after that. Don't need to know that. Of course, we will also have time for questions during this week, later on in the week. Not that any question really matters, but we'll... because it'll be thought trying to understand that which is beyond thought. Anyway, we will have questions.